and liftoff.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to All About Twine, presented on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com. Our shows are also available on iTunes as a free download. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron of Florida Estates Winery. Located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. This one-hour call-in talk show is educational.
Labels themselves are, like I say, they become an art form.
Entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
And all about wine.
So we're continuing with France tonight.
Call the show and go on air with us at area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Or post your comments and questions during the show on 1000mics.com. All About Wine starts now.
I think they're trying to stay in. Yes.
Gotta keep warm.
That's right. Tonight we handed Snuggies out to everybody so they can borrow. However, we do need them back. We want them back. We'll wash them and leave them next time. 55 degrees outside right now. It is blistery, blizzard-like conditions out here. Unbelievably cold. 55 degrees. And I know there's somebody out there.
Florida, that's it.
That's right. And I heard.
Bundled up. We got the.
I read that. Next or this coming Sunday we're supposed to have snow flurries or something to that effect. So that'll be interesting.
I heard that too.
Yeah.
You know, possibilities of snow flurries. Yeah.
I already think Tampa's just going to shut down because we can't handle it.
You start getting snow in Tampa and you know they'll have to go down to the beaches to get the sand so they can throw in the streets.
Yeah.
And then it'll start hitting the beaches. Yeah. So, I don't know. It's a major conundrum.
Yes. I'm expecting canceled flights. We're not going to have any postal service. Of course, it's a Sunday anyway, but it's just going to change. If we get a snowflake in the sky, everything's going to shut down because we don't know how to handle it.
It's scary. It's scary to think what the possibilities might be.
Yeah. We are tonight going alphabetically on the U.S. states. We are now at Indiana, and before we get on to that, I just want to mention this real quick. It is the official birthday date of Florida Estates Winery, and we do like to say happy birthday to the winery officially. I don't know what that is. Are they like
a few people? Yeah.
That's supposed to be okay. Anyway. So happy birthday. I know the celebration was last Saturday, and you had, you said 16 vendors at the wine fest?
16 vendors, wow. Yes. 16 vendors. We had some new people there. We had a hot tub on display, the local hot tub. It was a very nice birthday party. We had birthday cake that we shared with everyone and gave out door prizes throughout the day. Everybody got some great door prizes, and it was really a very nice birthday party, or anniversary, if you want to call it. I prefer to call it a birthday party. So it turned out real well.
Very good. And the weather has been incredible, even though it's been on the chilly side, on the cool side. But you couldn't ask for clearer days, and just the weather has been unbelievable. So excellent time to visit. Let's see. We are at if you want to get on the program, I don't know if the intro is kind of sounding bassy on my headphones, but if you want to get on the...
It did here, too.
Did it? Okay, I'm going to have to change it. And if you want to get on the program and you didn't catch the phone number, the area code is 646-727-3235. 646-727-3235. And if you're asking why that's not a Florida number, it's because we're going through a switchboard, which is located somewhere in outer space. I don't know where it comes from, but... You're actually dialing a satellite up in outer space. So
outer space.
Yeah, I have no idea. I think it's in New York or something, 646. But anyway, call that number. It'll get to us, and we will. If we do have you on there, we'll hear this. And thank you. And that will tell you to, we have a caller coming in, and we'll break the show and bring you on. It's all about wine, so as long as you're talking about wine, we'll keep you on. And if you have a winery, or a vineyard, if you you want to add your comments or anything, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you, and especially callers from Indiana, because we're talking about give us a call.
And it could be from anywhere, though. If you have a winery or a vineyard and you want to call in, you listen to us, we'll be more than happy to talk with you.
Absolutely.
But Indiana is our subject tonight, our state tonight.
And it's all you now. There you go.
Oh, well, thank you. I wasn't trying to interrupt. Thank you.
Oh, no.
Indiana. We always like to start out talking a little bit about the about Indiana as far as maps of Indiana what the state looks like. The state of Indiana is located in basically the heartland of America. They call it the Midwest. Excuse me. They call it the Midwest. I was born and raised in Missouri, and I always called Missouri the Midwest. They call Indiana, Illinois, Ohio the Midwest, and Missouri now is called the Near West, which I don't know. I won't editorialize the possibilities of them getting it wrong because who am I? But Indiana, in the middle of the country, basically, actually not the geographic middle. The geographic middle is out in the middle of Kansas somewhere, but middle of the country. It is bordered by Ohio and Illinois. On the south, you have Kentucky, and on the north, it is Minneapolis. I'm not sure right off the top of my head here, but it is a farming area, a lot of wineries. They have 92 counties in the state of Indiana, all pretty much the same size, no big enormous counties or anything. The major interstates that go through it, I-70, goes east to west, runs right through Indianapolis, which is the capital. I-65 north-south, again through Indianapolis. I-69 north-south through Indianapolis. And then in the southern part of the state, we have I-54. And then along the northern part of the state is 95, I-95. Which is up around South Bend and Gary, Indiana, which is right over on Lake Michigan, actually. So South Bend, Indiana, you might recognize as home of Notre Dame football. It's always mentioned whenever we mention Notre Dame. South Bend, Indiana, which is the northern part of the state, just not too far from the border. The elevation of Indiana. The southwest corner is actually very low elevation. That's where you have a bunch of rivers coming together, and it just like Indiana, just like Illinois, Indiana was affected by the ice age. The upper part of the state is rather flat where the ice came down through, and it pushed everything south, and so the southern part of the state was not affected by ice age. And we got a call. That might be Jim.
That's 812. Let's see. Get the ring off of there. It's a 812 area code. So let's see if we can.
That's Jim.
Okay, let's bring him on. Jim, are you there? Is that Jim?
Yes, Ron. How are you?
There you go.
Hello, Jim.
How are you, sir?
I want to introduce you to Mike. He's he's the one that answered. So we got Mike and Ron here talking to you. Jim, everyone, if I may point out, I talked to Jim earlier. He is from Turtle Run Winery, which is located in the southern part of the state, close to the Ohio River. I invite him to join us on the program tonight so we can talk about Indiana wines and the soil and the climate and actually, I had a very good conversation with him, and then when we were done with it, I invited him to call in, and he is doing so. So I really appreciate that, Jim. I'm going to let you tell us about your winery a little bit, tell us about the wines you make, and I'm just going to let you run with it. So go ahead.
Well, if you let me run with it, I would end up taking up the whole program, so I have to be very cognizant of your time. But Turtle Run Winery has been open to the public since the spring of 2001. And when I by chance, I ended up studying wine in college, not from a drinking standpoint, but just trying to pick up some additional courses in college, and I just couldn't help but notice the similarities between France and southern Indiana as far as like the soils and subsoils and things of that nature. When you look at Burgundy, France, you think of limestone with alkaline clay soils, and when you look at our property, it is limestone with alkaline clay soils. You start measuring up the climate, it starts making a lot of sense, and you know, this is back in the 80s, and there just wasn't a lot of quote-unquote local wineries out there. So when my wife and I announced to the world, to my family especially, that we were going to start a winery in this area, they thought we must have taken some stupidity pills in the morning instead of our vitamins. So when we finally explained to them exactly the reasons why and how it made sense, They came around. They came around, and since then, we've been growing a lot of grapes, making a lot of wine, making a lot of good friends along the way.
Well, what grapes, if you will, tell us about your wines and what you're growing and how you came about them and all that.
Okay, great question. We grow a lot of different grapes. So we not only grow the vinifera grapes, which you're probably familiar with, like Pinot Noir, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Cabernet Franc, but we also grow what are called intraspecific hybrids, which include Chambersin, Vignole. Those are some of the older ones, and you'll find those vines not only in Europe but in Australia as well. We also grow grape varieties that were created by Cornell University, such as the Indiana State grape, Traminette. Actually, that was created by University of Illinois, but really got its claim to fame from Cornell University. Corot Noir, Noir A are a couple. We also grow American varieties such as Moore's Diamond, which probably nobody's ever heard of. But don't worry, it makes good wine. And all of a sudden, I've just blanked on one of the other varieties that we grow. We just planted this year, Catawba. That's correct. We just planted Catawba this year. So our farm is situated very high up in Indiana as far as its location in consideration to other lands around it. And so that gives us great air drainage for frost, gives us great airflow for disease-resistant issues. Overall, it's considered one of the best sites that has ever been selected for a vineyard by Purdue University in Indiana. So we're very, very happy to have found the farm that we did find. It took us 3 years, by the way, to find that location.
Wow. So you started it yourself then. I mean, it was not a winery or anything. You just got in and chose that, and that was the location.
That's exactly it. And what was very interesting was when I was studying Burgundy in college, and we were looking very, very closely at the at Gevrey Chambertin. This is a very, very expensive area where grapes are grown in France. And my professor would take a picture. Or took multiple pictures. This is pre-Photoshop days, folks, so pre-internet and all this fun stuff. And what happened was he took pictures from far back and said, I'm going to progressively get closer to this vineyard. And we're talking about a term called terroir, which has everything to do with the soil, the subsoil, the mesoclimate, the microclimate, the overall climate, slope. Everything very, very specific to that location. And as he kept zeroing in and zeroing in, I was absorbing this like a sponge. Eventually, he got to the point where he said, the vineyard on the left gets $2,000 a ton, the vineyard on the right gets $10,000. Disappeared on a test later on, when nobody was ready for that. And then he went right into why was it. And there were the pictures. And so you had to go very, very specific as to what he was looking for. And I ended up acing that, and I kept that in my mind for all times as far as location, as far as growing grapes. And so it did. It takes a long time to find that right location. You can never settle for a secondary location when it comes to grapes. With over 1,000 natural chemical compounds existing in a bottle of wine, you really have to pay very, very close attention to where those grapes are grown in order to make exceptional quality wine.
The you mentioned earlier to me, and we were talking about the area there that you picked to grow the grapes, make the winery, is part of the Indiana AVA, or American Viticulture Area, of Ohio River Valley. Did that have an influence on you and your choice of where you chose to plant?
It absolutely did. I certainly wanted to stay within the AVA. I certainly wanted to be in there because it gives you some credibility. I mean, one of the things that you're always looking for in the industry, if you're outside of the areas that have been considered the premier grape growing areas in the United States, to be Oregon, Washington, and California, as well as New York, obviously. You need every bit of credibility that you possibly have going into this. So we certainly, being able to promote Ohio River Valley as one of the first AVAs in the United States, certainly did play a part, and a big part. But most importantly, if I was outside the AVA and I found better land than what I thought was within the AVA, I was going to jump on that. We just happened to be looking within the AVA and found the perfect site for growing grapes.
You also mentioned, too, that there's a new AVA that they're looking at there. Would you go into a little bit more detail about that?
Yes, certainly. Thank you for mentioning that. We are looking at establishing what is called Indiana Uplands. And what this is an escarpment area that is a higher elevation. As Ron was mentioning, a lot of Indiana was scraped very, very flat due to the ice age. And this particular section of Indiana was not. And there are a lot of good characteristics. For instance, if you're looking for the limestone capital of the world, as they call it, that'd be Bedford, Indiana. And that particular area is within our AVA, as we have outlined it for the TTB, or Tax and Trade Bureau. And we really have concentrated on this higher elevation section of Indiana that is just loaded with limestone. So the limestone, by the way, for your listeners, does a number of things for the wines. Number one is when you're having what I call a monsoon year, when you just have all sorts of rain. Normally in our limestone areas, the limestone is very, very karst. The land is karst. So what that allows for is great water drainage. Grapes like to have what are, as I learned in college, dry feet. So you don't want those vines sitting in a lot of moisture. So if you've got soils, or if you've got an area where you can get a large amount of rain in a short period of time or over an extended period of time, you want that water to be able to percolate straight through. And so that limestone gives us that advantage of being able to do that. On the reverse side, for instance, this year we had a massive drought, but my vines were green the whole time. And one of the beauties of our area with that karst limestone is very fractured in nature. And so the grapes are able to drive their roots down through those fractures and source underground water. So the vines are always getting the moisture that they need in order to ripen the grapes fully. So it's a total win-win situation as far as where we grow our grapes to make wine.
Speaking of growing grapes again, you mentioned a little bit, and I'm going to go into a little bit more of the grapes that you do grow and the wines you do make. You mentioned the main ones, the Cabernet, the Pinot Noir, Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Chambord. But you also do quite a few from the Cornell University grapes, the hybrid grapes, and do a lot of blending. Tell people about your blending and about the other grapes that you do use.
That's a great point. We are. I like to call myself a blendaholic. So I don't know if that should. I should probably coin that at some point. But the reason that we blend. Let's look at what senses a wine actually affects. The first one is aromatics, and your mind is going to tell you, number one, is a beverage safe to actually drink? That's the first thing your mind does. Every time you drink a beverage, you breathe through the nose, and your mind is saying, yes, no, can I drink this? Number two, it's doing an association of past flavors that it has smelled before. So, yes, no, I'm going to drink this. Okay, yes, now is this going to give me a positive or negative experience as far as these flavors? This is safe. Now, is this something that you truly enjoy or not enjoy? So these are flavors, there are aromatics that are coming to focus. So we pay very, very, very close attention to that. One of the things we've noticed with the what are called intraspecific hybrids goes right into the next point when you taste the wine. The hybrid grapes like Chambersin, the Corona Noir, the Noir A are excellent, excellent mid-palate wines. And so they hit right down the center of that tongue, and they really have a good effect there. Whereas the vinifera are very full throughout, the hybrids go right down the middle. Now, here's what's interesting. We have learned to blend the hybrids with the vinifera to give a really, really full feel into the mouth itself, because two senses are coming out when you actually taste wines. Number one are the flavors. You're picking up flavors. But number two, which we stay very, very attentive to, is the overall mouth feel. How does that wine feel in the mouth? How's it affecting those bittersweet salt and acids components of the tongue? So we'll actually, in some of our blends, you may not actually be able to taste the wine that we've added, but we're actually moving that spectrum around on the tongue so that you have a real good enjoyment with that wine. So sometimes we'll move it up a little bit in the tongue. Sometimes we'll move it back. Sometimes we'll move it to the side. Sometimes we'll move it towards the middle. And the beauty of being able to blend vinifera and the hybrids is you just have so many different resources as far as affecting the flavor profile and the enjoyment that a consumer can have with those wines. We started doing that years ago, and I don't think I'll ever stop blending those two together. We're just making much more dynamic, much better wines. It just works.
You said you have, what, 28 wines. Not all of them are blends, I would guess. You have some, obviously your Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Noir are just 100%, or do you just, being a blend master, blend everything?
It's kind of funny that you mentioned that. The French would hate me, but I've never bottled a straight Pinot Noir yet. I've always found it blends far better than anything else in the winery. So they hate me. And one of the interesting things on my email mailing list that I send out, I reported out, all right, folks, for the first time in 10 years, or 11 years, whatever, we actually have a Cabernet Sauvignon. Yes, I did not blend it. So amazing. Here it comes, straight varietal wine. I said, however, there is a little catch in the Cabs. One of the things, here's something I did not share with you earlier. There is something that we did as a winery that is actually, we're the first winery that I know of in the United States anywhere to have taken terroir into oak and into the barrels themselves. And years ago, with the help of Kelvin Cooperage in Louisville, they had their staves separated by geographic origin, and we actually went through a very scientific process of being able to determine that the geographic origin of the oak affects the flavor of the wine in a different way. So when we ended up bottling the Cabernet, when we aged it in the barrels, we very specifically had it aged in in different oaks. I mean, it's all white oak, but from different growing areas. So we had a very specific area from Kentucky for part of it, a very specific area from Tennessee, and we could end up blending the two together to make one wine, and that was the intent from the beginning. But when it came to bottling, we decided to separate and segregate those two and never blend those two together, and we ended up doing two bottling runs and kept those two separate, and the customers can very easily distinguish the difference between those two, and it's a lot of it has to do with geographic of origin of the oak. It's just amazing science, the whole aging and making a wine. So we were on the forefront of that. We did that in 2001, and I'm starting to see other wineries and barrel makers are finally picking this up. I knew Kelvin would start marketing it, and kind of a funny story with Kelvin. They called me in, I think it was 2006. It was 2006, fall of 06. And they said, "Jim, do you need any more barrels?" I said, "Well, we're pretty good right now." "Well, I've got a new location where we source oak." I was like, "Oh, man, don't be telling me that, Paul. What do you got?" He said, "Well, we got some really nice oak from up in Minnesota." I was like, "Oh, you're killing me. All right, send me 6 barrels." I said, "That was the easiest sale you got all day." So we brought in these barrels from Minnesota, where if you really think about it, that's a colder area, so you're going to have a shorter growing season, so you're going to tighten up those grains a little bit. And lo and behold, I mean, I had no idea what I was getting into when I got this Minnesota oak, as I called it. But good night, was that ever good. And it's a total different dimension than oak grown in Kentucky, totally different from what we've seen in Tennessee, Ohio, et cetera. This Minnesota stuff was really, really neat. And, I mean, you fly blind a little bit sometimes going in when you get some new oaks, but good night. I mean, we were able to really, really make some neat wines from that Minnesota oak. I guess the best equivalency would be you're ordering a pizza, and you got two choices. Let's say in two nights you're traveling. One night you're going to be on Fifth Avenue in Chicago, or Fifth Avenue in New York, and the next night you're going to be on Cicero Avenue in Chicago. You're going to get pizza at both times, but they're going to be completely different styles of pizza. Both are very good, so you may like the New York better. I may like the Chicago better. Doesn't matter. They're both very good pizzas. The interesting thing, that was the same thing that we found with the oak. The Minnesota oak, I guess, would be the equivalency of a New York pizza, and the Kentucky oak would be more of a equivalency of the Chicago style. So very interesting things we've learned over the years from where oak is grown.
Tell me more. You got me curious about this oak. What are you picking up in the Minnesota oak, and what are you picking up in the Kentucky oak and the others? Is it so subtle that you really have to look for it, or is it bringing out flavors of the grape, or is it giving it the oak a different dimension? What's happening?
It's giving the oak a different dimension. I mean, we're very, very specific when we do this stuff. I mean, we're gonna make sure the oak is the same age. So, for instance, if we're comparing 2-year air dried oak or 3-year air dried oak, it's gonna be 2 or it's gonna be 3. I mean, everything across the board is gonna be the same. The toasting level, perhaps we're doing medium, maybe we're doing medium plus. We're gonna have that dialed in exactly. What I've typically found, a lot of natural chemical compounds are shared between one plant and another. One of the most fun ones to talk about is coffee. The coffee bean itself actually has the exact same chemical in it as the aromatic that comes from a skunk. A lot of people didn't know that, but if you've ever heard the term skunky coffee, now you know the rest of the story. That same chemical compound that we find very offensive in a skunk actually exists in the coffee bean. So what's interesting, where I run a parallel with that, is a lot of times you can pick up in oak, in some barrel-aged wine, you can pick up the flavor of coconut. I can tell you this. You'll never get an ounce of coconut flavor out of Minnesota. At least we haven't experienced it yet. But you can out of Kentucky. So maybe it has to do with the grains. I'm not 100% sure, but I can tell you this: what we find with the Minnesota oak is the flavors are much more reserved. It kind of reminds me more of a French style of oak, where you're really trying to pull that oak out, even in the first wine in the barrel, whereas a Kentucky oak is just going to throw it out at you, and you have to be very, very careful with it. The Minnesota oak just seems more refined. There's less of a spectrum flavor, as I could say. You know, you don't have as big of a lot of different flavors coming out of that oak. It's very linear in nature, whereas the Kentucky oak can be a lot. You can pick up a lot more. You pick up vanilla on this. You pick up some coconut there. You pick up just a lot more flavors in the Kentucky oak. I'm not saying it's better or worse. I'm just saying it's different. So if you want your oak to be more subtle, go Minnesota. If you want it to be more flamboyant, go Kentucky. That's what we found over time. And then it just depends on what you're after. But we were literally the first winery to do it. I put terroir right up into oak. I said I thought there's when wine has naturally 1,000 at least 1,000 natural chemical compounds, a lot of that do it. That's grape wine. Why would we be so tight on the oak? And one of the things that I learned in college was when we look at French oak versus American oak, the French oak has four times less flavor profiles than does American oak. So that gave me even more of a reason to try the origin of location as far as where that oak came from, as far as the flavors that you would develop. So we're going to continue on this journey by doing that. But one thing about wine is you have to be very, very scientific. It's kind of fun. There's a lot of cardinal rules in wine that you don't ever want to violate as far as winemaking. But there's a lot of room out there as far as being able to experiment. And some of them you do run a little bit blind. I mean, when I got that Minnesota oak, I was like, I don't know what the heck I'm going to get. So it was like fire in the hole. Let's throw something in there and let's do some scientific tests on this and see what we got. So we're right now. I'm standing in our barrel area and looking across it, and it's a pretty even blend. Number one is, probably Ohio's number one. There you go. I'm talking about Kentucky and Minnesota, and there's Ohio, number one oak in the winery. Followed closely by Kentucky and Minnesota. They're probably about even as I'm looking across. Tennessee comes in a distant third.
That's really fascinating because whenever I talk about oak to people and all that, I don't even think about bringing up Ohio, Kentucky, Minnesota. I mean, most of the time I think about Missouri and Arkansas. That's usually whenever oak is mentioned in the United States, those are the areas that they're coming from. And you didn't even mention it in the ones that you said you're getting, which is just fascinating that areas like Ohio and Kentucky and Minnesota are making mm-hmm. oak barrels and making good oak barrels, obviously.
Correct. All the barrels are made at Kelvin Cooperage in Louisville, Kentucky. We're in the catbird seat for this. I mean, you go into Kentucky due to the bourbon industry, you've got a ton of barrel makers from Bluegrass Cooperage to Canton Cooperage to World Cooperage to of course Kelvin. I mean, my gosh. I mean, you just it's awesome. So and I literally will drive down to Kentucky and pick these barrels up. We've been with Kelvin from day one, and I just have no desire to switch. The barrels have just been awesome. As long as they keep, these guys really have it down. And I tell you what, if they come up with them right now, that's where they've been sourcing the oak. So we've yet to play with the Arkansas or the Missouri oak, but I'm certainly open to it. But I guarantee you this: going forward, as long as I still have access to that Minnesota oak, we're going to continue getting that in. It's just, I love the smoothness that comes out. It's just like silk, as far as the flavors that we get out, both for both whites and reds. Very different than the Kentucky. Kentucky's a little louder. I mean, let's put it from a music standpoint, the Minnesota's classical music, and we got Van Halen coming out of Kentucky. So okay, maybe it's not that extreme, but I'm hoping your listeners get that. So
I'm sure they will. Another thing too, you and I talked earlier. You mentioned something about bourbon barrels and you know TTB with apologies, but bourbon barrels being used for Concord grapes and making a Concord wine. You said you tasted that and it's phenomenal. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Oh boy, yeah, I can expand upon that. For your listeners, there is a law that states that you cannot mix fruit alcohol with grain alcohol. It comes out of the post prohibition. Reason for it is grain alcohol is far more cheaper. Sorry about the bad English there. It's much less expensive to make than fruit alcohol. So in order not to corrupt the industry, the wine industry is not allowed to use grain alcohol. It makes sense. I mean, seriously, if you could just take grape juice and put grain alcohol in it, call it a wine. I mean, that's so inexpensive as far as the winemaking is concerned. What's interesting is I have heard, and I don't know where who's doing it, but we've had customers come in that have asked, hey, do you have any wine that's been aged in bourbon barrels? Because we've tried it and we liked it. Well, if you're aging a wine in bourbon barrels, there's some laws of physics that are simply right there in play. If you've got alcohol that is absorbed inside that wood and you put a liquid inside that barrel, laws of physics are very, very simple in this. There has to be an equilibrium on the percent of alcohol in the wood and the percent of alcohol in the liquid. So therefore, you're going to have absorption from the wood into the liquid that's inside that barrel. So anybody who is aging wine in a bourbon barrel is going to automatically pick up bourbon. In this area, it's very easy to go to Louisville, Kentucky, and pick up bourbon barrels. They're always trying to get rid of these things. And a lot of home winemakers will pick up these bourbon barrels. Now, what's beautiful from a home winemaking standpoint is the chemistry that goes in. And I won't dive deep into that because it doesn't make any sense. But essentially, if you're a home winemaker and you make wine in a bourbon barrel, you've got some antioxidant properties going on that will solidify that wine as far as it being a sound wine. So it's a great way to make wine. Now, what's interesting is if you ever try grape wine that's been aged inside a bourbon barrel, it is a totally unique flavor. And if you have any wine snobbery in you, you will absolutely hate this stuff because it draws a great offense to what a wine should be. However, if you just like to consume different drinks and are open-minded, I tell you what, first time I tried it, I could not believe it. I said, my gosh, I'm not supposed to like this. I'm supposed to hate this. I like this. This actually tastes good. I don't know why I like this. I did. And literally in my mind, I'm going, this just doesn't make sense. Why am I drinking this stuff? But it actually tasted good. But we'll never do it. It's kind of funny. Last year, I had a TTB. Formerly, the TTB for your folks is Tax and Trade Bureau. They were part of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. But the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms became more interested in firearms and tobacco than alcohol. So hence we were split off. And it's kind of fun. Well, no such thing as fun as audit. But anyways, I made them fun. And I prefaced with my auditor. I said, all right, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm telling you beforehand, I don't do it. So do we have that clear? He's like, yeah, we're fine. Okay. I said, what is the opinion of bourbon barrels inside a winery? He's like, okay, which of these barrels formerly had bourbon in them? I'm like, dude, none. None. I said, and then I went over the physics of it, and I asked him, I said, what is the TTB ruling on this because you are not allowed to add grain alcohol into fruit alcohol. And he's like, you know, I wish you wouldn't have asked that question. We don't have a ruling on it because it hasn't been brought up. But yeah, I know where you're going with this. You're absolutely correct. But you could today bring in a bourbon barrel into a winery and age wine and not get into trouble because you haven't physically sat there and added grain alcohol into the wine. Though I know what you're doing. I know what you're saying. I get it. I understand it. But, yeah, that's something we need to look at. So my advice, if there's any wineries out there, don't be doing that because I've triggered the TTB to look at that as a possibility. Not that I'm trying to turn anybody in. I'm not. I was just curious on it. And to this date, I do not know of any wineries that have it. My suspicions are this is simply in the home winemaking side of the ledger and you know, have at it, guys. I mean, it's a great way to preserve a wine. If you don't know what you're doing and you don't understand the chemistry of wine, make it in a bourbon barrel, you'll be fine.
That's, if anyone's out there, you know who to blame now for, yeah, for bringing that up to TTB. 2007, throughout the Midwest, including you guys also, there was a major problem with the grapes. You want to expand on that a little bit for the listeners?
Certainly. Bring back a nightmare that I turned into something good. What's interesting is as a grape grower, we pay very, very, very close attention to climate and what's going on with it. And one of the interesting things that we look back at, I'm going to stick real quickly towards 2009 and 2010. In 2009, the global warming folks had to sit back and not say a word as our area went through the coldest summer on record. Matter of fact, this century, if you go to my area, we have set, there's something called average daily temperature, average monthly daily temperature. Five of the coldest months on record have been set this century in our location. So in 2009, we had 2 degree days over 90 degrees Fahrenheit. Our highest temperature in 2009 was 91.7 degrees Fahrenheit. In 2010, we had 84 days over 90 degrees Fahrenheit. You just couldn't help but get over there. There's a lot. I won't go into all the reasons, but this stuff set up around the spring equinox. I actually send out an email forecasting out weather 6 months in advance, and it has been spot on for the past 10 summers or from that equinox period of time. But anyway, back in 2007, specific to that question, we go into March, and it starts warming up. And I am hating life, because I'm looking at wind patterns, and I'm seeing this nasty cold air mass still sitting up there in the Arctic. And I'm just praying, don't release. I mean, everybody else loved it. Everybody thought it was great. You're out jogging in your shorts in the morning. We're reaching 82, 83 degrees in mid-March. Life's good, except for us grape growers. Just to let the listeners know, our supposed frost-free day is May 11th. So on April 1, we had shoots that were about anywhere between 2 and 6 inches across our vineyard. I mean, this is way before that time period on April 1. I'm scared to death. All my buddies in the industry have got their fungicide sprays. They're out there spraying like crazy. Jim, when are you going to do it? Nah, not interested. Because I saw that cold air mass, and I'm starting to watch that jet stream. I'm just going, no, don't do that. No, 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 please, no. And on April 6th, we got the nastiest cold front that we've ever gotten at that time period. I went to Easter Mass, and it was 19 degrees out with a 19-mile-an-hour wind. So luckily I saved all that fungicide.
Wow.
Because there wasn't any need for it. We lost 70% of our crop on that day. Now, one of the beauties was, if there was anything, if there was any silver lining, we were a little slow on our pruning. so we waited on the we were about two thirds through our vineyard, and that's why we were only at 70% loss. That two thirds that we already had pruned, we were probably about 85%, and luckily on some of our varieties we weren't fully through, so we were able to salvage some crop. The beauty of it, though, that came out, there's always a silver lining. We ended up bringing in some grapes, and we ended up making some really neat blends. And some of those blends we continue with today because they were so popular. We blended Chardonnay, a grape that we grow, with Chardonnay, so parent-child. We blended Traminette, a grape that we grow, with Gewurztraminer, another parent-child blending. So we created some very interesting wines, and even out of our vineyard, we started blending. We started coming up with some blends with Vignol and Chardonnay, which we'll never ever get rid of on our list. So just some neat stuff came out of the carnage of 07.
We got a phone call coming in from New Jersey now. Maybe it's a question or something. So,
yeah, let's
Mike, you want to?
Yeah, we'll bring him on. 732.
Bring him on. Don't leave us there, Jim.
Yeah, 732 area code. I believe that's New Jersey. Are you there?
Hey, how are you guys?
Hi there.
Excellent.
Hello. Hello. Hello?
Yeah, you're here.
I'm on the radio.
Yes.
Hi, this is Jerome Johnson.
Yes.
I'm calling from...
I'll find our questions, Jim.
Hello? Yeah. So this is Jerome Johnson. I'm calling from New Jersey. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
We're doing well, and you?
I'm doing great. I'm actually a huge wine connoisseur. I mean, I love to experience new tastes that flavor my palate. I love listening to your show so far. You guys really do a good job.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And I just had a quick question. I mean, I never actually attempted to... make wine, but I mean, I love drinking wine. I love desserts, wine, wine with dessert. I actually had a nice wine the other night. Went well with my creme brulee. Had a lot of high alcohol content. Very pleasing. But I want to ask you, how do you create the wine, like in the fields? We're talking about the fields here. Like, what is the process in the fields? I mean, is this an age-old process 200 years ago, or is it the same process? Like, how does it get done? I'm really interested to know.
Can I take a stab at that?
Yeah.
Jim, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I'd like
Jim,
to take a stab
at that one.
Jim, are
you still
with us?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I am. Yes,
would you like to answer that?
Yes, I'll go right after that. Okay.
Did you hear that question?
Yes, I sure did.
Okay.
It's a very, very good question, because wine is made in the vineyard. I am a huge proponent of that. Here, okay.
Straight?
You're playing with 1,000 natural chemical compounds in that glass of wine, so everything counts. So the very first thing when I look at a new season as far as the grapes are concerned is how you prune those vines. So
wait, how do you do that? Oh, wait, what's your name again? Sorry, I didn't ask your name. Is it Raymond?
This is Jim Pfeiffer at Turtle Run Winery.
Oh, Jim. Okay, sorry. I thought your name was Raymond for some reason. It's the first name that popped into my head. Oh, but keep going.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay. So the most important thing is making sure that there's a concept called sunlight in the wine. It's by Richard Smart, and this is a well-renowned professor, doctor, as far as viticulture is concerned. So...
Okay.
Understanding that everything counts in the vineyard as far as sun exposure, lack of sun exposure, it's going to have an effect on the wines themselves. There is a thought process going into the fall as far as understanding the balance of your pH, which is strength of acidity, TA, which is total titratable acidity, and your sugar levels. So it's paying very constant attention to that. There's also another aspect that we look at the seeds themselves and see what color those seeds are.
The grape seeds or the cotton seeds or what kind of seeds are these? Just from the base of the flat of the vine or the grape?
These are the grape seeds.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Mm-hmm. And you're also looking at the flavor. Now, every so often, you run into some anomalies in your growing season, and you have to decide whether or not you want to take advantage of those or not. This year was the perfect year for an anomaly that we took full advantage of. There is a rot. Oh boy, that sounds like a bad word. There's a rot called noble rot. Its scientific term is called Botrytis cinerea.
Botrytis cinerea?
Botrytis is what it is. Botrytis cinerea. And wines from Botrytis or Botrytis-sized grapes or noble rot grapes can command some of the highest dollars in the world. Some that I'm very familiar with are Sauternes from France, Trockenbiersnels Lezes from Germany, Tokaj from Turkey. These are some high end grapes. And what happens is, or high end wines, what happens is this fungus attacks, it pokes holes in the grapes, you get some evaporation of the natural liquids from the grapes, so you get concentration of flavors and sugars, and the fungus
does it have the same like flavor and consistency of like cum, like grape, like grape juice? Is it the same consistency with the sugar and the thickness?
It's a little thicker than typical juice. It's a real pain to run through at the stemmer crusher, I can tell you that right now.
So it's thicker.
It's a little bit more viscous. You're getting less liquid per bunch than you normally get. So it jams up your equipment, I can tell you that right now.
Listen, you guys are really great. Is there any other callers on the line? We got a kind of nice conversation going about the wine. I always like to meet new people.
Yeah.
I love meeting new people. Is there anyone else on the line?
Not right now, no.
Oh, all right.
Anybody on here?
Well, I'll be getting going then. I mean, I had a really good time on your show. If you boys ever want to hit me up, my number is 732-774-427.
Okay, we had a disconnect there, unfortunately. I appreciate the call, Jerome, and thank you for calling there from New Jersey from the 732 area code. We have a few minutes left, and this is Mike again, by the way. I just wanted to mention real quick, Jim, you're still with you're still with us?
Yes, I sure am.
Okay. I just wanted to mention real quick so our listeners have a way to contact your winery. It's Turtle Run Winery, and that is at 940 St. Peter's Church Road Northeast. That's in Corydon. Is that how you say that?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Indiana, and your area code is 812-952-2650. That is the phone number to call Turtle Run Winery, and you can visit them on the web at www.turtlerunwinery.com. And I was just doing some research here, and just the comments, the reviews that I'm seeing from yahoo.com, it's a must visit. For everyone, it's a must see down there in Indiana, southern Indiana, south of Interstate 64, I believe. And this other one said it's a charming family owned boutique vineyard, and just you're just getting some great reviews off of the internet from people commenting. There's several on TripAdvisor, Yahoo.com. There's a couple of Google responses that. Just really, really sound well there. And we didn't get into wine trails, but I'm seeing a reference to wine trails, like a blue trail, green, red. I'm not sure what that is designated. I know we're getting kind of limited here, but we have about 5 minutes left in the program. And do you have wine trails in Indiana, or have we haven't gotten to that?
We do. We are We are members of the Indiana Uplands Wine Trail. It is the oldest wine trail in Indiana, and I am one of the founding members of that wine trail. And it is like-minded, crazy winemakers who got together that are obsessive-compulsive about quality, not only in the wines that we produce, but in our customer service, just everything that we do. All of us have a strong passion for what we're doing in our winemaking. Good friends on this trail. It's fun when we have a wine trail meeting because we're always bringing wine together and trying each other's products and just having a great time with it. There are a couple of us that really push the edge as far as the our winemaking and just do not hold back in anything that we do as far as our winemaking. It's fun trying some of these neat concepts that we come up with as far as wine. The beauty about the wine trail is there's a lot of us are very skilled as far as our winemaking, very educated in the winemaking processes, and so when we're talking about some neat concepts as far as wine, it's just a whirlwind of a conversation. Two of us, Ted Huber over at Huber Winery and myself, both came up with the exact same process for regenerating a barrel using brandy at the exact same time, the exact same year. And when we were meeting one day, we went over the process, and both of us literally came up with the exact same idea at the same time, took the exact same time to age out the barrels and get some new flavors out of them. It was just hysterical that the two of us did that, converted all those barrels into port barrels for making port wine, and just it's amazing the wine quality that we've got here. The soils, the climate is really good for growing grapes, and part of our business mission is to get Indiana wines on the world wine map. And with our friends in this industry, I think we're going to be able to do it in my lifetime. So I don't see any reason why not. We're all trying some really neat things in the vineyard and in the wineries, and I could go on and on about our great friends in the Indiana Uplands Wine Trail.
Good deal.
Jim, thank you very much for your time, for your information, and for calling in. We really do appreciate it. And for anyone who's interested, the phone number to Turtle Run Winery is 812-952-2650. And they're Eastern time zone, so if you need to get a hold of them, they're on the Eastern time zone. Again, Jim, thank you very much. It was great to have your expertise on the radio tonight, and I really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Ron. Yeah. And if you're ever up in this area, please stop on by. We'll give you a great tour of the winery and show you our operations. And likewise, if I'm down there, I can't wait to. My father-in-law lives in that area, so hopefully the next time I'm down there, I'll make sure to spend some time. And I took a look at your website, and definitely got to stop by.
Well, I look forward to it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Ron. Thanks for calling in, and thank you.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Okay, we are back, and let's see. Just wanted to, we have about a minute, 90 seconds left. Thank you, Jim, again, from Turtle Run Winery. Next week, since it is the holidays, and that'll be our last show, I believe, for here. Thank you. We will be discussing champagne. So you definitely want to
juice of it and pouring it and serving it and everything. So tune in.
We'll probably be drinking it.
And drinking it.
I will be on vacation, but I will definitely dial in from my location, my remote location. So, I mean, basically like we're doing now, but I'll be in a different city. So that'll be cool. And we'll see you all next Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And we will have champagne. And it'll be our holiday program, and it'll be the last one for the year. We'll see you all after the first, after next Thursday. We'll see you all. Anyway.
Yeah, well, next Thursday, we'll have a couple of weeks on.
Yeah. You want to check out Florida Estates Winery at 26241 State Road 52, which celebrated its official birthday, which is today, but they celebrated Saturday at the Wine Fest. It was great. Located in the Land O'Lakes. Florida, down here, you want to give them a call at area code 813-996-2113. Visit them on the web as well. at www.floridaestateswines.com, and also on Facebook, do a search for Florida Estates Winery. I also wanted to mention Turtle Run Winery is also on Facebook. So we'll see you all. Thank you for joining us this evening. Join us again next week, next Thursday, right here on Blog Talk Radio and 1,000 Mics. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Okay.
And 1,000 Mics. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, 1,000 Mics.